Welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 126th episode of the Monkeys Fighting Robots Movie Show. The movie show is upon us. Today, EJ and I have an interview with the director of episode 9, Colin Trevorrow. That's pretty big, exciting stuff. He's talking about his new book, Book of Henry. And then on the second half of the show, we're going to take a look at unconventional leading men. This is going to be a conversation all in itself because Baby Driver's coming out. There's an unconventional lead in there, and we need to figure this out. We need to figure out action movies. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. My co-host, movie critic EJ Moreno, is not off this week, and I probably should have updated the...
Yeah, I just was like, as you were reading it, I'm like, yeah, I'm here this week. This is me. I'm back.
Welcome back, EJ. Welcome back.
It feels like we haven't recorded a podcast in so long, and I'm just really excited to be back. Now we kind of reformatted the show since I've been gone. Now we have the movie show. So if you guys do happen to like the show, please let us know. Since we are doing this whole reformatting and rebranding, we want to know if you guys like it. So please subscribe. I don't know if you can give it a like or a thumbs up on this, but do that if you can. Comment, please. I want to know if you guys like this new movie show, especially when we start launching off to comic show and horror show or wrestling show or whatever else we're ever going to do. It's going to be really fun.
And our Wonder Woman show is our highest rated show.
As it should be. Like I felt like we really enjoyed it. And I think we offered not a different perspective because I think we talked about a lot of things people like. But I think we really gave it our full effort. And I think our passion really showed. And I think the viewers and the listeners actually really liked it.
And I liked it. Wonder Woman was amazing. And I'm so glad it's doing well and people are positive. And kindergarten kids are running into class being like, "Woo, I saw Wonder Woman. It was the best thing ever." Like, I feel like it's pretty amazing what Wonder Woman's done. We're already starting to get the backlash. I've started seeing some Sigourney Weaver posts like, oh yeah, just so you guys remember, like I was probably the first female action hero.
And I had to comment on one of these posts because I saw something very similar. I think we may have seen it from the same person. And I was just like, yes, okay, cool. Cause especially because we had that conversation and we were both saying, yes, we respect Sigourney Weaver. But she's the only one in the conversation ever. And it's not fair to the other females that we've talked about. And she's not even really the first. We've even talked about people who went back to like the Blaxploitation with the Pam Greers and all that. So she's not even the first badass action female even. Yeah, she does it with sci-fi. And the conversation should have changed to Wonder Woman as the first really badass superhero female, you know, because I'm not going to count Supergirl or Elektra. So, yeah, it's interesting, and there's going to be, of course, be backlash, but I think it's more of the conversation as opposed to the movie. And I'm glad it's more of the everything around it and not just attacking the movie.
And that's what's awesome. When you're really good at something, you always get haters.
Mm-hmm.
That's an affirmation that you did something really well is when you get haters.
Absolutely, because that's the worst. We talk about it all the time. Like, the worst is a movie we see and we don't love or hate it. We're just like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
I would rather hate something because, like you said, you get that passion from it. Don't care if it's negative or positive. You're getting a reaction out of somebody. And, hey, Wonder Woman did that. Even if it's not about the movie and just the conversations that started, I'm here for it.
All right, so let's get to our interview with the director of Episode 9, Colin Trevorrow. He is talking about his new film, The Book of Henry. And so during my interview, I had to ask him about Star Wars without asking him about Star Wars. So it's an interesting interview because I'm like, listen, all I really want to do is talk about Star Wars, but I know I have to talk to you about Book of Henry. So let's see if I can use these like mystical questions to have you kind of talk about Star Wars and let me know what you think. Hey, Colin, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Sure thing, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. We missed you in Orlando for Star Wars Celebration. I got to get this question out of the way real quick, and then we can dive in the Book of Henry. Where are you with the script for Episode 9?
We're working. we're working and we're designing, and you know, there's so many elements that go into these movies, and it's the script is obviously the most important one, but we have a lot of people who are brilliant at their jobs who are engaged in this right now, so it's an exciting time.
Hi, let's jump into Book of Henry. Did you need to make Book of Henry, or did you want to make Book of Henry?
I definitely didn't need to, and I really wanted to. It's something that connected to me as a parent, you know, and certainly as a sibling, and just as a filmmaker. It was a story I wanted to tell, and it was just the kind of story that I feel like I needed to tell at this moment.
And speaking of the story, there wasn't a screening yet in Tampa for the film, but what I've read so far, it sounds like you challenged the audience with this film. Can you kind of explain that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've screened it all across the country, and I don't, you know, audiences have responded really, really strongly and emotionally to the movie, and I think that it just takes twists and turns that I think people aren't expecting, but it's been kind of amazing to go and talk to people and then just, you know, kind of feel the room and see how this thing is playing out. But it was important to me to just kind of get out of New York and L.A. and you know, get into some other cities in our country and really feel it connecting.
You go from frightening the audience with dinosaurs to an intimate, like, personal family thriller. What's important to you in building tension in a film?
Well, I feel like oftentimes something that helps is being able to see fear through the mind of a child, because I think that we remember what it was like to be afraid then, and there's only brief moments in adulthood where you relive that kind of fear. I don't think we sit in our beds and, you know, wonder if something's going to come out of the closet as adults. I don't. Maybe people do. but to be able to tap into that, you know, with a movie like Jurassic World, certainly with Jurassic World 2 is something we talk about and think about a lot. And then in a case like this, you know, being afraid of what's beyond your neighbor's front door, about if there's evil that close to you, I think is a really universal idea.
And Jaden Lieberher is one of my favorite young actors with St. Vincent, Midnight Special, The Confirmation, and now Book of Henry. As a director, what do you see in Jaden that makes him a special actor?
You know, his emotional intelligence is just off the charts. And he has such empathy and such understanding for the human condition and oftentimes what it's like to be a person who is different from him. And that's something I think we can all learn from. We lose that ability, I think, especially as we get older and entrenched in our habits and in our ways to be able to just put ourselves in someone else's shoes. And it's a great gift as an actor to be able to do that.
And Safety Not Guaranteed came out in 2012. You shocked the world with Jurassic World in 2015. Now you have Book of Henry. How has your directing style evolved?
You know, I think that it, I don't know if it's evolved because I'm always just serving the story. Like every time that I go to work, it's what can I do to serve this story and make it better. So it's such a singular purpose, and I try not to be affected with the work that I do. I try to shoot a movie in a way that won't distract you from the story that we're telling, and you won't think about the directing or the filmmaker. I feel like for you to say, hey, this in the middle of a movie, to say, wow, that was a great shot, or this movie's really well directed, that would feel like I pulled you out of the experience.
And are there elements that you've learned from Book of Henry that you will use in future projects?
I learn something every day. That I'll use. I think all of us do. You know, as we go through life and have different experiences, you know, we're constantly learning and growing and changing. And that experience was a challenging one for me. It was a very emotional movie to make. It was a hard movie to make. But I'm glad that I did it. It really gave me something that I felt I really needed, which was to really connect with just some very basic, pure emotional storytelling.
And the treehouse looks to be a very impressive set piece in the film. Do these real set pieces inspire you when you're filmmaking? Like you walk on set and you're like, wow, look at this treehouse. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Absolutely. It's something that I would have loved to have when I was a kid. It's something that, you know, we built from scratch in the forest, and you know, with old pieces of other people's memories, and from junkyards and antique stores, and I think that, you know, real sets, you know, both in a small movie like this and on a big movie like Jurassic World, they connect you to an environment and make you feel like you're there and not just sitting inside a computer.
And you and I are the same age. Growing up, there were about 100 film critics. Now anyone can be a film critic or just a critic in general. Do you think that's helped or hurt the industry, the film industry?
You know, I actually think it's hopefully like opening us up to some more diverse voices and some different perspectives as opposed to, you know, who we've been relying on in the past. So, I think anytime, you know, we're able to hear a broader range of reactions and opinions, especially in a country that has so many different kinds of people and so many needs from so many elements of the audience. I think it's important, whether it works out for me or not. I think it's important.
I know you were in talks to remake Flight of the Navigator. Can you remake The Last Starfighter first?
It's funny. I was talking to somebody about that recently, of moments that are really scary for children in children's movies, and they pointed that one out. Like, there's something about when somebody's eyes get either glazed over or white or covered up that can be the scariest thing for kids. We were just discussing The Last Starfighter in that context.
In researching for this interview, I saw you wrote a screenplay for a buddy cop film. I always close out all my interviews asking my guests who they would cast as the two leads in a buddy cop and why. And now I'm asking you.
Leads in a buddy cop. Wow. You know, I've always felt like, I think Liam Neeson's got a great, like, old grizzled buddy cop movie in him. Because he seems like such an ornery kind of a character. And, you know, seeing him deal with, you know, somebody, gosh, who would be great? You got to help me out. Who's a great partner for Liam Neeson?
Oh, I need somebody small. I feel like Liam Neeson has that stature.
Or even like a Melissa McCarthy, or just like, ooh, somebody who's so different from him. You know, like the best buddy cop movie is two people that you could never possibly imagine together.
Colin, thank you for your time, and best of luck with Book of Henry.
All right. Thanks, man.
Take care. That was Colin Trevorrow, and his new film, Book of Henry, is out now. If you like his work, go support the film, because he'll make more indie films after Star Wars. I mean, I think he's basically, once he does Star Wars, he's going to make a lot of money. He'll definitely make another indie, whatever that passion project is next for him. He's an interesting person. Him and I are relatively the same age. I think we're like a few months off, and we kind of grew up in the same area as well. So it's very interesting to see where he is and where I am right now. But what he didn't do is instill a lot of goodwill towards Star Wars for me as a director.
Hearing that like interview, you guys do have a connection, and now hearing that you guys are kind of the same age, kind of from the same area, it does feel like you guys have that like old friend aspect when you guys were talking. So I always love that, and some of the things he says was very interesting. I can tell that he's kind of in the same mindset of you. Yes, he wants to promote the film he's on, but I think he even wants to talk about a little bit of Episode 9 already. I think everyone's just kind of hyped for it, and he knows the media. All the media is basically like, how do we talk about Episode 9 without talking about Episode 9? And you did really good at that.
Before the interview, because I was on hold because Colin was ordering lunch, I think he was at one of the Lucasfilm campuses because he was ordering from a waitress and he was like talking about like the food he had yesterday and other stuff. And so I know he's like at Lucasfilm. I know he's at Lucasfilm right now, working on Episode 9. And I was just like, how do I talk to him about that? And in my research talking with him, or before I talked to him, he has a lot of like 80s love. Like he definitely is a self-admitted Steven Spielberg, Amblin Entertainment, like lover. Like that's his passion when he went to film school. He's like, I want to do E.T. That's what I want to do. And like he broke down scenes and all this other stuff. It was interesting how he broke down fear. Like it was good to hear somebody talk about that.
And I think fear is very important. And I think fear is something that it could be translated to any film he does, even if it's something like Book of Henry that's more aimed not towards kids, but has a kid lead. Or you can bring fear into what he's going to do with Episode 9. And God, you know, that universe has so much crazy evil in it, that fear is a crazy possibility. And I really, really like it. And I think he understands that aspect. Do I love Jurassic World? Not really, but even he admits he thinks the next Jurassic World will be even better. So I think he gets it. And I appreciate him as an artist more so than a lot of these guys who do these big Hollywood films. I usually like, oh, I liked you when you're an indie guy. I think he still has that indie guy soul, and I appreciate that.
Well, he hasn't done that much. Star Wars is going to be like his fourth film.
Yeah, and I think that's – what a fourth film. Like, he doesn't get that route that a guy like a Gareth Edwards, who just did Monster and then did Godzilla and then Star Wars. Like, he's on that path a lot of them are. Even James Gunn was like that with over on Marvel when he was like, I'm going to do Slither. Kind of not really do too much, and bam, here I go with Guardians. I like that route that a lot of these indie guys are going, where we're giving them a chance early on as a person who's trying to break into the industry still. It gives me hope, and I like seeing guys like a Colin Trevorrow push it and actually open the door for someone like me in the future.
And I did like what he had to say about critics, because back in the day, you only had about 100 of them. Now you have like everybody can basically be a critic. And I liked how he said, like, hey, this is giving different voices to different people who didn't have a voice before. And whether it affects me negatively or not, I still like the fact that all these voices are out there. And I thought that was kind of a cool perspective coming from a person that is basically sat in front of critics and just, raked over the coals.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. And I don't think critics should be the enemy, but I also think he understands that critics have a power now, more so especially in the Rotten Tomatoes era of reviewing and film, that they are important. And I think especially after dealing with The Rock, with Baywatch, who seemed to not enjoy the critics bashing his movie and could not handle it, to see someone like him where...
Pause. If you buy the latest issue of Star Magazine, you will see monkeys fighting robots in there, because there is an article about The Rock freaking out and movie critic Dewey Singleton. His tweet is quoted... And if you look right below Dewey Singleton, you'll see monkeys fighting robots. So we made it into the tabloids, my friend.
Yeah, we are now like dirt rags. Like, I like it. I like it. We're getting in that to like that niche-y, gossipy community, and I like it. And I think Colin Trevorrow, I think he would even kind of respect that aspect. And I like that critics should be feared at times because they do have a lot of power. But at the same time, enjoy what they have to say. Like, as long as they don't get too pretentious with their attitudes, there's nothing wrong. And even I just didn't love. I just said I didn't love Jurassic World, but still, I think even he would be like, yeah, that's cool. And I like that. I think we need more artists like him out in the industry.
Yeah, push the envelope. And speaking of artists, Edgar Wright has a new film coming out. Baby Driver comes out June 28th this month. I think we're seeing it this week is when it comes out.
I believe so.
Yep. Press screening is this week. And this film is an enigma to me because I can't stand the lead in the film. And it's nothing, I don't think it's Ansel's fault at all. It's just what I would think would be the lead in like an action movie. That's not what I see in Ansel. And it's even in the name, it's the Baby Driver.
No, absolutely. I think he is not what you would expect, especially seeing him in the Divergent films. He was kind of a tool in that. And he's never really been what I think of as a traditional action star. But at the same time, when we're talking about this, there's a lot of non-traditional action stars that we love. So what is about him that we aren't connecting with? It's really interesting. And what is a non-traditional hero? That's the bigger question, too, is what makes him not the stereotypical hero?
That's the big conversation that we want to have, because I feel like action movies have evolved to where that traditional Stallone, Arnold type guy isn't there anymore. So we've kind of gotten smaller with a Jason Statham, or I'm trying to think of who the action, Owen Wilson started doing things like
Matt Damon. Matt Damon's completely someone I would have never, looking at Good Will Hunting, to then looking at him and Jason Bourne, it's not what I'd be like, oh, yeah, you're who I think. So, yeah, I like that it's evolved from these big muscle steroidy kind of guys to a more sleeker style. And I think in the middle of that, we have a lot of guys like Jean-Claude Van Damme or Jet Li or Jackie Chan who are amazing action stars but aren't the biggest towering monsters. Yeah, like Jean-Claude Van Damme's a big guy, but he doesn't have a huge stature. And I think that's what I like, that it was kind of between 80s and 90s was that shift. A lot of guys like Keanu Reeves blew up at that time. And, you know, with Matrix, I would have never casted Keanu Reeves as a lead in an action film. And I like what he does in John Wick. I like what he did in Matrix. So, you know, I like that sometimes these non-traditional guys get the role.
It's an evolution of the cinema, because before it used to be guys you wanted to be. Like, that's who the action star, or who guys who Hollywood thought you wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And now it's more of an everyman type hero kind of thing. And I'm kind of in the middle on that one.
I am too. I like these. I see it a lot in the wrestling community. A lot of people like the 80s, where it was the Hulk Hogan or Macho Man, where it was these big over-the-life figures. And I like that there's more human, like you said, the everyman. That's why I like a movie like Taken with Liam Neeson, who is an older man, who's a father, and then to see him still be a badass, I think that's really interesting. Or a guy like Danny Trejo, who has never really made a leading role until Machete came out, and that was maybe he was about like in his 60s when that came out. So that's crazy that, you know, I like that these guys who you wouldn't normally pick are now getting picked. And if that's not the evolution of cinema, what is it going to be in 20 years? Are we just going to have little babies fighting?
Oh, baby fighting? That's the best. Well, who's going to be the guy that survives like Bruce Willis? Because Bruce Willis used to be like the everyman hero, and now he's like, he reverted back into this 80s indestructible hero. So who's going to be?
You know, we say that about Bruce Willis, but he just got signed on and I think is filming to do the remake of Death Wish with Eli Roth. And I think that's kind of that Charles Bronson role where, like, yes, he looks like a badass, but I wouldn't normally think that Bruce Willis at this age is going to be the Death Wish, you know, crazy killer. And I think that's going to be interesting in that he's kind of taking that idea that we have of him and is morphing it. Once again, he's evolving. And a lot of these action guys had to evolve because we don't really love the Stallone and the Schwarzeneggers anymore.
Whoa, come on, man. They're like, okay, I still love Stallone and Arnold. And they're like 100 years old now. I mean,
I still respect them, but I'm not seeing a movie they're leading in, an action movie. Oh, most of them go straight to DVD now anyway. But I don't think they have that action Hollywood appeal. Do I think it's crazy a guy like Chris Pratt does now? Yes. But that's just, you know, that's the nature of the industry.
I don't think that Arnold or Stallone are going to try to do the action movies that they did in the 80s now. I mean, they're 70 something years old. I mean, like,
oh, because there wasn't just a Terminator and a Rambo a couple years ago.
Okay, did you see that Rambo?
No, I didn't.
Okay, that Rambo is insane. That is the bloodiest.
Isn't it like heavy R too?
Yeah, it's the bloodiest film I've seen in a long time. He just goes on and just obliterates everyone in that film. And it's one of those films where, like, you get shot with the gun and there's like a flap of your skin that like still hangs on, but it comes off. Like, it's instead of just being a blood hole, like, there's the flap. And that's just brilliant makeup design when you got the flap, because that always creeps me out.
Well, we're going back to Stallone. I like the role he's playing in action films now. What he did in The Expendables, or what he did in Creed as this kind of the mentor of the new age of action heroes. That's awesome, because he has that muscle-bound, crazy big guy mentality, but he can tell a guy that's built like Michael B. Jordan to be this cool big badass. I like it. I think he has something that is needed still, but I don't think he is the sellable 80s action hero that we once at least had in our heads.
No, he's 100, but I'm still going to go see his stuff. But I do think, you just bring that one out with The Expendables, I think he's trying to find that next action hero. He's really trying to find that next action hero.
I think so too, because I think he respects that the genre very much so. And I like that he does. And I think, I just don't think, what I fear that he still has, I see it a lot in wrestling, where a lot of the older guys are still so fearful of the younger people. That's basically what my whole Cars 3 review was the older generation not willing to even give a thought to the millennials or to the new way of doing it. And I think that's what I fear with a guy like Stallone trying to find the next era of action, that he's just going to want to keep repeating what made him big.
Yeah, you got to be big. You got to be on steroids. You need to have like
Animal
a really, really hot like love interest.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Scott Pilgrim vs. the World bothers me so much. It's the anti-action movie. Anti-80s action movie.
It is. I will always credit it for being a beautiful visual film, but I like that. I like seeing a guy like that. I think it's interesting. Trust me, I'm still waiting to see a queer badass in film. I want to see a gay character be the next Liam Neeson or a Danny or anything like that. I want to see that role being taken over because we're seeing it a lot with a nerd community with a Jesse Eisenberg or a Michael Cera in a film. But when are we going to get that? I want to see more evolution of that. We're ready. We're tweaking it. We're seeing it. And that's why I said for non-traditional, I want you to be quirky or eccentric, or an artist, even like gay or a different skin color. A lot of times in the 80s, it was a lot of older white guys.
No, they were younger. They were younger in the 80s. I mean, they were in their late 30s, early 40s. I mean, we had Action Jackson and Mr. T, I feel like, had an action movie as well. DC Cab. No, there wasn't a lot of diversity when it came to the action movies in the 80s. They were very stereotypical. Now they're very stereotypical. Like, big buff white dude, crazy hot love interest, token evil bad guy.
We still see this debate where people won't accept the idea of Idris Elba as Bond, a fictional character. They can't imagine it being a black guy. And it's crazy that, honestly, I would rather see Idris Elba kick ass in a Bond movie than most actors right now. So that's why I'm saying I think that mentality is still there, and that's what worries me. We just talked about it as, well, you could just flip the channel if you don't agree with it. But if we flip the channel and there's nothing there to flip to, then there's no point. So I would like us to at least start seeing a shift. That's why I like seeing a guy like Peter Dinklage on Game of Thrones. To see a little person, a dwarf, kill it and be the most badass character on that show, at least one of them, I love and respect that.
And he's badass without doing the action. And that's the moxie. He brings a lot of moxie to the table.
Absolutely. And I think that's the other half of action heroes. That's something I like in Channing Tatum. He's what you would look at and think of him as a traditional action star. He's buff. You know, he's a white man and he's young. And I think then you see him in a comedy role or something like 21 Jump Street. And he's shifting with the idea to me of what an action star is, oh, you could be funny. Oh, you can kind of be careless. Or even look at him in the movie coming out later this year, Lucky Logan or Logan Lucky, where he looks like a meth head. I think that's awesome that he is completely shattering what the idea of him was.
He is. But I want a good action movie, and it doesn't matter who the lead is. And I don't think I don't want to say I'm jonesing for the 80s one, but I'm jonesing for an epic hero's journey where like you get beat down, and then like you have this monstrous guy at the end that you got to defeat. Basically,
John Wick is doing though. I think John Wick is keeping that alive, and I think seeing the previous, I think that's what Atomic Blonde, I know we haven't mentioned women, but I think that's what
that's because we mentioned women two episodes ago. They had their time.
But still,
kidding. Kidding. Oh,
please reference that you're joking before we get the female hate. But no, I think that's what I want to see is I think it's starting to shift to me it was the video game mentality where you basically lead up to that big boss battle at the end. And that is missing from a lot of films, but I do think something like John Wick or Atomic Blonde are trying to keep it alive.
John Wick was good. The John Wick 2, it was just full-blown action kind of thing. It was almost senseless. Problem. Yeah, it was definitely... I'm just trying to think. Again, like I said, I haven't been really satisfied with any Marvel movie ever, even though I enjoyed them, but I've never been like completely... It's been a while since I've come out of an action movie where I'm just like, oh my God, that was amazing and brilliant and awesome. Wonder Woman was really good. As far as a superhero movie, it gave me a lot of feelings that I wanted to feel, but then the end battle just still was like, ugh.
I was going to say up until basically the end battle, I think Winter Soldier is a really good action film. It has that espionage 70s thriller aspect. But then you look at the beautiful hand-to-hand combat with especially the first scene that he meets Winter Soldier is one of the best on-screen action films I have seen in a long time. I love that fight. And I love actually a lot of the fights in Winter Soldier. But then once again, we start getting to a third act that then becomes bigger than the film and sometimes a little unnecessary. So I think superheroes are the kind of the good route for it, but a lot of the times they get kind of, there hasn't been a straight action superhero film maybe ever.
You know, I was trying to think in my head, what was the last action film that I think is the best action film I've seen? And it has to be The Matrix.
Okay. Just pure action? Because I was going to say, honestly, this year with Logan, Logan is one of my favorite action movies, I think, ever. I think it transcends all the genres it should. I think it has heart that I think an action movie needs. But the action scenes, there's plenty of them as well. I think that's going to be, honestly, my favorite modern action movie.
But then the final battle.
I still don't mind it. It's filled with action, though it's, you know, thankfully it's on a blue beam in space. It's not aliens. Yes, he's basically fighting a version of himself, but I think it's still, I think once again, that brings heart to it. So I really like that as an action movie.
It's really good. And it definitely tugs at a lot of the right emotions here and there. But I'm just trying to think of like complete action movie where I came out of that theater was like, because Logan ends on a kind of a downer, just spoiler alert, downer, kind of a downer note.
Yeah, and I think a good action movie should, though. Yes, we like to see the hero's journey and everyone walks out at the end alive and the hero's the good guy, but honestly, sometimes heroes risk and sacrifice their lives for that, and I think that's what I got from that was, to me, that Logan has the truest hero journeys I've ever seen.
Right, but I'm going back to, like, what I want to enjoy, like, I enjoy cinema, but I want to enjoy a movie or an action movie. And for me, the action movie, like, I want to come out, like,
super
pumped. Yeah, I want to come out pumped. Like, that's what I enjoy. Like, I remember, you know, like, I had those feelings as a kid when I go see the Rocky movies. You know, I come out of theater, I was like, yeah, we're going to beat up everybody now. Like, it's the best ever. Like, if you train hard or whatever it is. And, I mean, I know these are, like, token or hokey, like, tropes from the 80s, but that's what I enjoyed. And I just remember coming out of The Matrix when he flew, I was like, oh my god, they can make a Superman movie now. Like, it was just like brilliant. They established some awesome visual effects in it. The fighting was insane, and then just the how the fighting worked out, and then the big bosses, you got to that epic fight, like, and you, by the end of it, you're like, oh my god, what does this mean? This is amazing. I can't, you know, there's even more coming after this. Like, it was one of the first movies where you're like, wait a second, there's more? You know, it's like, and it was just so pumped after that movie.
Now, okay, now talking about the pumped mentality, I will say then I have my favorite action film, and it's in between what I said with Logan and you said Matrix. It's The Raid, an Indonesian martial arts film.
I knew you were going to say that. Not as a bad thing, but I'm just saying, like,
honestly, I'm a big fan of Asian cinema, and I do think they have some of the best martial arts and action. But The Raid, the layers of what we say from the villains, and we get to see, like, we were just talking about that big boss villain at the end, the layers of fights, you walked out pumped. You don't leave really on a down note, but you're just kind of like, damn, that was a hard story. I will say I think The Raid is the best modern action movie I've seen in a long time, where it has all the things that you've mentioned that it should have. And, you know, I really wish we could have translated that to a more American audience. And yeah, it was made for $1 million. It made $9 million. Still not bad, but and especially for an Indonesian film. But I really, really appreciate that movie. And I think that is probably one of the best modern action movies.
And I'm trying to think of what's going on with the world of cinema, because we're making a lot of films. It's not like we're not making films anymore. We're making a lot of films, and there's a lot of TV shows, and there's a lot of new genres coming out, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the action genre. Because when I went to Box Office Mojo, I was like, oh, let me just type in action movie, and they don't. It's action, like superhero, action heroine, like it's
action adventure.
So. Like they don't even, like, there is no action genre anymore, even on Box Office Mojo.
No, and I think genres are starting to be, that the lines are starting to get messy. Look at horror films. There's not just a horror film anymore. You have supernatural horror films. You have the psychological thrillers in horror films. There's so much in that thing. So the same thing would apply to an action movie. Look at comedy. Has the same problem. So action movies, you're not going to find just a traditional action movie anymore, because there's so much. I think, unfortunately, action comedies have taken over. And I think that's why we have such a problem trying to pick out modern ones, because what really, like, what, Fast and Furious? Is that, like, the most pure action movie we have right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Actually, and it comes out every 2 years. and you made a good correlation that I feel like comedies are failing now too. Like, you know, I feel like there was, I don't know, are they?
Well, yeah, with comedies, to me, we don't even have romantic comedies anymore. Not that I'm asking for it, but that was the thing. We would at least get one or two every year, a very, like, Katherine Heigl, Kate Hudson starring against somebody. And we're missing those. So I think it's a genre problem. I think as genres are starting to kind of fall apart or trying to adapt other genres into them, and we're losing just singular visions where, like, Get Out, to me, is a pure horror film. Get Out, why it has jokes, it doesn't lean into a horror comedy. It's still horror. So I think horror is the only thing that's, like, kind of pushing everyone else aside and is trying to push forward, where things like action and comedies are having to rely a lot on each other to then be good.
Yeah, because I think that Something About Mary ruined it for everybody. Like, Something About Mary was really good, but it was, like, raunchy, and they saw that success, and then they tried to push the envelope on what comedy means. And it's like, oh, comedy is raunch. And I was like, no, comedy isn't raunch. Like, that's an aspect of comedy and works.
Or it should be, we should get one raunchy comedy a year. Like, we had something in the 80s with Porky's, but Porky's wasn't the one comedy of the year. Yes, it's pure raunchy, but you had something like a Groundhog's Day to kind of counteract it. Not saying those came out the same year, but just kind of giving you like how I viewed the comedies. And same thing with action is, we're getting a lot of action sci-fi, but we're rarely just getting a pure action movie. I think Fast and the Furious is the only definitive action movie we have. And even some people would debate that it's not even that.
Yeah, Tom Cruise did his action movie with, what's his name? I'm blanking on the name of the guy. But the first one was really good.
Jack Reacher.
Second one was sequel hell, if I've ever seen sequel
hell.
I
always get confused with Jack Reacher and that stupid Jack Ryan movie Chris Pine was in. And those came out so similar. Which Chris Pine, another one that's, I wouldn't really cast him as a traditional leading man, but after Star Trek and now especially Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman, I would put Chris Pine on the tops of mini list.
Okay, you just mentioned Logan, and things are just starting to go in my head. Denzel Washington is the action hero right now. Like, he had The Equalizer. Man on Fire is an amazing action film.
God, I love that movie. I even love Deja Vu, which mixes a lot of other things in that genre as well. Yeah, Denzel is someone we always kind of can count on. Even last year when we both saw Magnificent Seven, we were kind of like, eh, with the rest of it, but we were both like, oh yeah, Denzel though. Like,
yeah, but Denzel.
Like, oh, I don't give a damn about everyone else, but did you see Denzel? Like, it is crazy that he's kind of an Old Faithful in that sense. We're like, even The Equalizer, I don't love that movie, but I would watch it because Denzel kills it.
The Equalizer is a straight up action movie, and I was like, but Man on Fire is Logan-esque, where I think that Denzel survives at the end of the film. I'm assuming he dies. I think it might be a downer note, but like, that's a film. But that was a movie where I was like, I was pumped afterwards just in the fact of like his epic sacrifice for that. I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, the second thought was like, I'm never going to Mexico City ever. Ever.
Which, once again, some good action movies should scare you from going to certain places. Like a Hostel did with horror films. Most people didn't want to go to Europe and just backpack anymore. They're like, no. So I like that feeling. And there's just someone we've kind of tiptoed around, but I don't think Tom Cruise is a conventional leading man. He is a leading man. He's Hollywood's favorite sometimes, especially foreign box offices love him. But I wouldn't, this little 5'5" guy, it's crazy that he is an action star. He even turned The Mummy into an action movie. So it is crazy what he can do.
No, I agree with you on that, but I've always thought of him as an action hero. I mean, because he had Top Gun. He came out with Top Gun, and like that's the epitome of homo, hetero, whatever you want to call the beach volleyball scene.
That beach ball scene is the gayest thing I've ever seen in cinema, and I've seen gay. Like I've seen gay porn, and I'm like, but I still think Top Gun's gayer. Like, come on, guys.
Is it Bravo gay?
Oh, no, it's not as gay as Bravo. Like, until you have Project Runway and The Real Housewives, you don't – that's a level of gay logo can't even touch.
But yeah, when Top Gun came out, and then he was just kind of, he was the leading guy like in the late 80s. And then he kind of did, you know, he did
he comes in the late 80s, but look, he had to deal with the Bruce Willises, who's still a bigger guy than him. He had to deal with the Stallones and stuff. And I think that's really interesting that he was, we just kind of gave it to a lot of the 90s, but he really did start the push to changing what action stars should look like.
It's his fault.
I love his Mission Impossible movies. Even the worst Mission Impossible, I'll still watch. Like, I'm still like, oh, these are fun. And I think he does keep action movies alive. As much as we give him, like, we roll our eyes because we know he's just going to run a bunch in his movie, he's still at least trying to keep the pure action alive, even mixing it with action sci-fi like Edge of Tomorrow, which is a great movie.
Yeah, no, he as crazy as he is, he is the torchbearer for sci-fi films. Like, he wants to make them. He wants to push those out and get good actors and good directors and good writers on them, you know? And
yeah, he wants to get them closer to his sci-fi lizard god. Like, that's why he likes sci-fi. It's close to his religious beliefs.
I know that you'll like this guy as a non-traditional hero or action star. Andy Serkis.
God, do I love him in that Black Panther trailer. Andy Serkis in that trailer alone was like, damn, you are going to steal this movie from a lot of people. Yeah, Andy Serkis is awesome. God, even the role he did as Godzilla, because he was in the 2014 Godzilla as Godzilla. He did the mocap. Awesome stuff. He brought life to that action. God, Godzilla goes beyond this Sylvester Stallone's as, like, he was the leading man for a long time in action monster movies. And I think, God, Serkis is really, really good. And I want to see him act more.
Yes.
Just him. Not
motion capture.
Because Caesar's great, Gollum is great, but Serkis is great too.
And because it just popped up here, I think Christian Bale, you know, it's a machismo fact. Like, I'm used to these giant Arnold Schwarzenegger roided out guys, and then you give me a Christian Bale as a Batman.
He has machismo, but I honestly did not like any action scene he did in any of the Batman movies. I thought he doesn't come off believable. I loved him as Bruce Wayne. Oh, he has that cocky, he has the swag that we need for, like, that action hero. But I really didn't like what he did physicality-wise, and I don't think that's his strong suit. Same thing like a Fassbender. I've never really seen Fassbender have to throw it hand-to-hand. He has a good action movie presence, but could he do – because I like hand-to-hand. I'm a big martial arts fan in films. That's why I like – even Tom Cruise tries to include that in his movies. So I like that, and that's where, like, a guy like Christian Bale doesn't really connect with me too much.
Larry wrote an article about him, and I love him, and I'll go watch whatever he does. Clive Owen. Like, that, yeah. He's got the jaw, he's got the broad look to him, and I really think he's a phenomenal actor, and he just hasn't been given the opportunity to be the leading hero. I guess he did King Arthur. He did Children of Men. He's done a few other ones. I'm thinking, what's the crazy over-the-top action movie that he did where he stabs a guy in the eye with a carrot?
And I think Paul Giamatti's in it.
Yes.
It's a crazy, oh, God. I actually kind of like that movie.
No, it's over-the-top insanity. Shoot 'em up.
Shoot 'em up, yes.
That was...
Talking about the shoot 'em up and over-the-top, there's an older action star who I love. I love Rutger Hauer. I will see, he was in Hobo with a Shotgun, I think, in 2011, and I loved him in that as an older action hero there, and what he's done in Blade Runner. I think Rutger Hauer is someone who, once again, is not conventional, especially now that he's getting older. He's even older than the Liam Neeson characters, and I like that about him. I think that's where I want to see guys like him. I'm tired of the machismo 80s action guys. I do want to see different. I want to see someone who, that's why I liked originally the Chris Pratt. Now that Chris Pratt's become more Hollywood and far more mainstream.
He's a Barbie doll. Barbie doll Pratt.
Yeah, now it's like, oh God, that. But at first I was just like, oh, ooh, look at that. I'm so happy. You used to be fat on Parks and Recreation. Now we're getting a body. And I'm like, oh, that's all you're doing. Oh, we're just playing Chris Pratt. So yeah, it's interesting that sometimes we could have that end of it where, like, we like them at first and then you're like, no, you can go away.
If you worked at a video store in the 90s, you would have been in heaven because Rutger Hauer had a movie come out every 4 months direct to video.
He was the king of, like, blockbuster Hollywood video exclusives.
Oh, man. This is interesting because this conversation is more than just about actors and action, because cinema's changing. And whether it be Netflix or our habits of buying or overseas influence, I feel like that's going to be a whole nother topic of overseas influence.
Oh, man. China alone is making movies for us. China loves the shittiest action movies. Don't know why, but something like XXX made hundreds of millions of dollars over there. America, it made like 41 million. Overseas, it made 335 million. Like, it is crazy what the overseas demographic likes. And like I said, I go to a lot of overseas films for my horror and my action because I like what they provide. So it's so funny that China likes what we have. And I'm like, no, I don't like these action movies. I would rather watch a Chinese action movie.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Okay, so we're establishing that Vin Diesel is a traditional action star.
Yes, I think he should do what a Channing Tatum does. He did it with a movie called Find Me Guilty, where he like got fat, he had hair, so he was completely different. I wanted to see him do more things like that, where he's bursting the mold that he's already set for himself. So we know him as an action star. He's good at hand-to-hand, he's good in action car scenes, he knows what to do, but I wanted to see him stretch a little bit more and maybe, you know,
but that's not what action stars do. Action stars don't stretch their character. They do one thing and they do it one thing well. They fight people and blow shit up. That's what an action star does.
I would like to see. I don't want people just be action stars though. I think you should be an actor who does action movies.
Nah.
Where Vin Diesel, I think he has it. I think. Like, I love what he does with Groot, and I think that's where the first, though he only says one line, the what he brings to Groot is so interesting, and I think that's where I'm like, oh, so there's an artist in there, Vin Diesel, and he's a hell of a producer, and I think he's going to move behind the camera soon, and I think he'll be a good force.
You think he's going to move behind the camera and be good for us? Like, directing?
Maybe not fully directing, but I will say
he's just putting the cash down.
A hell of a producer. He got Helen Mirren to be in a Fast and the Furious movie. That, to me, is producing gold right there. Like, I like what he does, and I think he understands the business, and I think he is, to me, another evolution of action stars who are also just smart businessmen.
Wait, Planet Hollywood was not a smart business decision?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
It was not. It was not. Oh, man. God, I want my 80s action films to come back, but I want them to come back better, because they wouldn't fly today, I don't think. It's weird.
No, but they do have a nostalgic feel to them still, and I think like my generation who just kind of missed it, and I had to deal with a lot of like meh 90s action, where it was a lot of the Steven Seagal films as opposed to the Sylvester Stallone, which I would rather take Stallone versus Seagal any day.
I don't think Stallone has fought Seagal.
Oh, wow. What a good fight that would be, actually.
Not now. Or trust me. Now, it'd be a pie-eating contest or something like that.
That would be. Oh, I did like a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies in the 90s. And I think, well, like I said earlier, he isn't really the exact definition. He liked to show his butt a lot in movies. So always
he does. He did. Oh, man.
There's a YouTube montage of just 5 minutes of every time Jean-Claude Van Damme has shown his ass in a movie. And I'm like, that's why you're the action star that we all need.
Very.
We don't need gay action stars. We have Jean-Claude Van Damme.
But I was hoping that that's where they were kind of going with the action movies. Because kickboxing, they're not really muscle-bound guys. Kickboxers? I mean, they're athletic and stuff like that. But I was like, oh, we need to go more into this like kickboxing genre.
We need more Bloodsport.
Yes, I know. I saw Jean-Claude in Bloodsport. But there was like an evolution of that. It was evolving in the 90s because MMA was first starting to come out or whatever it was called.
There was that Never Back Down movie in the early 2000s that was kind of that MMA influence. So yeah, I definitely think it could have been there and could have been better. Unfortunately, movies like Never Back Down kind of ruined it.
Oh, Never Back Down. That is whatchamacallit is in that, though. Never Back Down from 2008. Dude, there's like five of them now.
Yeah, unfortunately, that became that weird franchise that you're like, but those?
How did that like go where it did? Who was the guy who trained him? Jimon Hanzu. I knew he was in that. Like he's been in a lot of action movies.
But he hasn't had that leading role yet, and I would like to see it. And actually I credited an artist that I forgot completely who's now shifting to a lot of action, and he is a gay man, is Luke Evans. From Dracula Untold to what he did as Gaston to what he did in the Fast and the Furious movies, I actually want to see him do more action roles, and I think he's a believable character.
Margo, we got Beauty and the Beast, and we started to watch it, or she started watching. I had to leave. I just couldn't handle it.
Oh, and I forgot you don't like Josh Gad either.
Oh, no, the whole time I was like, fuck that guy. Every time I was like, hey, guest star, what are we going to be doing? I'm like, I'm going to kill you. Like, I'm literally
I've never related to a character more. Like, how, like, LeFou talks to, like, Gaston is how I talk to you. It's like, hi, Matt. I'm just your little chubby gay sidekick. You're so pretty. And you're like, mm-hmm. Thank you. Shut up now. So, yeah, that's why I related to that aspect of Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, non-traditional hero that I would like to see do more hit films, Ewan McGregor.
He deserved a lot more jobs. I think, unfortunately, he had that same Star Wars prequel franchise that kind of killed a lot of those people for a little bit.
Yeah, it took all his time. Oh, so mad. I'm still hoping he gets a Ben Kenobi movie.
Yeah, I think he would have done really well. And, you know, it's so funny, though, that we talk about that hurting him, but at the same time, that kept Hayden Christensen from doing more action movies, so...
Dude, Jumper's the shit, man. Jumper should have just been called Nightcrawler and painted him blue, and it would have been amazing.
Yeah, Jumper came out the same time Push came out, and I was just like, are they not the same movie, though?
No, because one is an epic mutant movie, and one is an epic mutant Nightcrawler movie.
Yeah. I was like, come on, they're the same damn movie.
And I saw them both in the theater because I will see any crazy sci-fi movie ever that is made ever. Because that's what I do. And Samuel L. Jackson and Michael Rooker were in Jumper. God, this is casting genius.
You know, I think it's really funny that we were just talking about that because I will say I will see a lot of certain actors. Like, I want to see Dane DeHaan in Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets. Like, I think he's going to be a decent action star in that. Not traditional, by any
means.
See,
that's what bothers me. Is like I see him and I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, I can't get root behind you at all because like your face is weird, your girlfriend's face looks like your face. Like, I don't know what's going on in that movie.
I am very confused that him and Cara DeVigliere have the same face. I find him attractive, but not her. So I'm like, well, this is odd. You are the same person. This is weird. Are they clones? I think that's the plot twist.
And if you are ever wondering whether you should see a movie or not. And you're like, I don't know, I haven't seen any reviews of this movie. Is it going to be good or bad? The sure sign of a bad action movie is Ben Kingsley as the villain.
Accurate. That is a true statement. Iron Man 3. Yeah.
Prince of Persia. The Sands of Time.
God, I always forget he always plays these he was Gandhi even. I'm not saying that was an action movie, though an action Gandhi movie. Would have been better.
Apparently, you didn't see UHF with Weird Al Yankovic because they made that movie.
Oh, I did not know about that. Gonna put that on my next.
I will gladly send you the YouTube link to the trailer to the action movie Gandhi.
Oh boy, did I ever want that? Now in my head is the cinematic universe of Gandhi, Mother Teresa. That would have been the action franchise we all needed.
Yeah, because there was, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name because he was like a guy with it. When the Hobo with a Shotgun came out, there was like Preacher with a Hand Grenade or something like that. I don't know. He was in 300. What's that guy's name? Gerard Butler. That's a typical. Is he a typical guy? Typical action hero?
He is, but he doesn't get roles, which is so funny that he does. He gets picked over, you know, people pick other actors over him, and it's odd that I'm like, but he's so everything you want,
because he did Olympus Has Fallen, which is a prototypical
action
movie, and then he did Gods of Egypt, which is Machine Gun Preacher, sorry, 2011 Machine
what
Gun
a great
Preacher
name. You know, God, can I just have 2 seconds to say I really love Gods of Egypt? It's so bad, but it is so fun to watch.
He's got to be. Gerard Butler's got to be in the same boat. He's probably got the same agent as Clive Owen, and they need to get better agents.
There's a lot of people who I'm like, who is not giving you gigs? Like, the same thing with like an Adam Driver, who is so unconventional, but I'm like, who's getting you jobs? Like, your agent must be amazing.
Hi, man. I feel like we've beat this horse to death, and as I'm on IMDb, it looks like Transformers The Last Night is coming up soon.
Yep, that is. I think our screening is Monday night, and I'm very excited for that. I'm glad it's not the rumored 4-hour cut that Michael Bay had.
Oh, man.
And I love long movies, but I was not there for 4 hours of Transformers. Unless it's all just Transformers, no humans, I would be there for that.
No, because he would fucking give us a Transformers ball and nutsack again if it was 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he needs to be very limited of how he does things.
Hi, EJ. Have a great weekend.
You too, my friend. Can't wait.
Hey, Matt. We survived another episode. Oh, no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew Sardo. My co-host EJ is also on Twitter at EJ Christ with a K. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to this show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 126th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host, DJ Marino, for putting up with me.
Oh, no. Once again, I we should change that because we've both been so nice to each other lately. Things have been good. Actually, let me not jinx it. Next week, we're going to argue heavily over Baby Driver and Transformers, I bet.
Oh, no. Justice League's on the horizon. Don't worry.
Oh, yes. That's going to be the hot debate of us.
Jeff Shea is the creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? Zaf Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.